And now we move to the third part of the lecture discussing religion and nationalism in India. In India, there has always been a tension between the views if India should be a Hindu state or if it should be a secular state where religious identity is not coupled with the national identity. If we look at India now, in December 2019, it is becoming increasingly a Hindu majoritarian state, like Pakistan is a Muslim majoritarian state. However, in Pakistan, the development into a majoritarian state has been gradual, and it has happened in decrease after 1947. Whereas in India, the development has been very sudden, and it can be traced to the year 2014 and the 5 years that have now followed it. Until that, the view of India as a secular state had prevailed. In India, the constitution became effective in 1950. The National Congress had led the independence struggle, so it also took a leading role in preparing the constitution. The National Congress had members who were suspicious of Muslims and who were of the opinion that the Muslims who had stayed in India would have to prove themselves as loyal citizens of India. However, when the constitution was drafted, it was the leftist secular orientation of the first Prime Minister of India, Jawaharlal Nehru, that became its main characteristic. The Indian constitution became unequivocally secular. It does not define citizenship on the basis of religion. It does not discriminate against any religion, and all the citizens have equal rights irrespective of their religion. Since religion was not a main concern of Indian nationalism, the unifying symbols had to be searched elsewhere. The National Congress led India with minor intervals since the independence in 1947 until 2014, and it was instrumental in coining certain concepts that were used in imagining the national identity of the Indian nation. First of these was Nehru's slogan, Unity in Diversity. With this, Nehru meant that religious, ethnic, and linguistic diversity was a key feature of the nation. In Nehru's view, this diversity and the ability to live peacefully with such diversity was actually the main feature of Indian culture and the key factor why Indian culture had flourished so long. The fact remains, however, that the representations of minorities like Muslims in, for example, Indian films often became shallow caricatures. On the other hand, the minorities had at least some visibility and presence in the public space. Another symbol of national identity was ancient Indian culture. This became a kind of a superstructure, the unity into which the diversity was fitted in. Although the ancient Indian culture was one, it had myriads of manifestations throughout time and space. In practice, the emphasis on Indian culture meant generous state supports of arts and crafts, as well as the founding of institutions where arts were taught and also conserved. Culture also played a significant role in cultural diplomacy, where artists represented India abroad through their performances and artworks. However, the well-meaning policies did not always reflect onto the actual life of minorities. If we look at the situation of Indian Muslims since 1947, we see that their position in the Indian society has steadily declined. The Muslims have numbered about 10% of the total population. At the time of preparing this presentation, in December 2019, they numbered 14.5% of the population. This means 195 million Muslims. Thus, India now has the third largest Muslim population in the world after Indonesia and Pakistan. As was noted earlier, the partition not only drove a wedge between India and Pakistan, but also between Islam and Hinduism in South Asia. It is as if nationalism has hijacked religion and turned it into a political tool. In India, this meant that Muslims have often been under suspicion after the partition. Can their loyalty to the state of India be trusted? Why did they not leave to Pakistan? This suspicion has led to a distrust, which has again led to the marginalization and ghettoization of Muslims in the Indian society. Muslims are generally poorer and less educated than other Indians. They are marginalized in most fields of life, even in art, literature, and music, where their role was still very strong in the early decades after the independence. Muslims also often live in less gentrified areas and are often populated by only Muslims. Muslims have always been underrepresented in politics in India. Their number among the members of parliament has rarely been more than 5%. In the state administration, police and army, their number has been even less, 1 to 2%. This can be explained by the fact that the politicians are chosen through elections where Muslims can make their voice heard through their votes. However, no similar process regulates the state bureaucracy, where Muslim representation has remained disproportionately low. The long rule of the National Congress ended in 2014, when the Hindu nationalist BJP party won the general election and Narendra Modi became the Prime Minister. The victory was preceded by a long and systematic work of Hindu nationalist groups to change the climate and public discourse in India so that the public opinion would be more favorable to the party's rhetoric and actions. Especially the RSS, with its widespread influence, had been instrumental in doing the groundwork for BJP's political success. Hindu nationalist groups, including BJP and RSS, had already given a demonstration of their power to mobilize their supporters when they demolished a 16th century mosque in Ayodhya called Babri Mosque. The mosque allegedly stood on the ground where the Hindu god Ram was born. It is indicative of India's political and social climate that in 2019 the Supreme Court finally gave the land to Hindus so they could build the temple there, even if the means by which the land was acquired were illegal. In addition to participating in campaigns utilizing mobs of volunteers, BJP has operated as a part of the Indian political system. It had already won enough votes in 1998 so that it could form a coalition government. In 2014, it became the largest party in Lok Sabha, the lower house of the Indian parliament, and Narendra Modi became the prime minister. In May 2019, BJP won absolute majority in general election. Narendra Modi has continued as the prime minister, and Amit Shah, one of the strongmen of BJP, has become the minister of home affairs. If we look at the relationship between religion and nationalism in India since BJP's victory in 2014, we notice steadily growing influence of Hinduism and a similarly hardening attitude towards Muslim. BJP's slogan in the campaign leading to the 2014 general election was "Development for Everyone." The party made exuberant promises that India's growth would increase, that there would be more jobs, especially for the young people, that the farmers would get a more secure income. However, they failed to deliver any of these promises. Instead, the government instigated two drastic economic measures that were meant to improve economy. In 2016, 500 and 1,000 rupee notes were declared invalid as legal notes. This act was allegedly meant to stall corruption. The goods and services tax reforms of 2017 were meant to increase the revenue. However, the taxation system became so complicated that many small businesses and manufacturers that are important in the bigger picture of the Indian economy found it extremely hard to cope with. The first term of BJP also saw an increase in the mob violence against Muslims in the form of, for example, the cow protection movement. the vigilant groups that had taken upon themselves the protection of cows attacked and killed Muslims whom they thought were taking cows for slaughter. In addition, Muslims wearing clothes that identified them as Muslims have been assaulted in public transportation. The government has either failed to condemn such acts or it has opened its mouth so late that the damage had already been done. The criminalization of diverse by triple talaq was the only legal action directly affecting the Muslims. India had been one of the few countries where a husband could still divorce his wife by saying or writing or communicating by a text message 3 times, "I divorce you." The new law criminalized this action. Despite the fact that many Muslim countries had long ago banned such a method of divorce, and notwithstanding that this practice was routinely abused to the harm of women, many Muslim organizations still objected to its criminalization. This may be because of the high-handed manner in which BJP handled the matter, and also because many Muslims do not perceive the action as a genuine attempt to protect Muslim women, but as yet another way BJP discriminates against Muslims. Regarding the fact that BJP failed to deliver its promises of development for everyone, it may be surprising that it won another term in the general election of 2019. This is partly due to the fact that all the criticism directed to the BJP government just seems to glance off. The mainstream media is, in general, very considerate when discussing the Prime Minister and his government. When it comes to the opposition and other critics, the members of ruling party are quick to blame them of harming national interest or exhibiting anti-patriotic tendencies. BJP also drastically changed its rhetoric in the 2019 election campaign. In February 2019, a suicide attack killed the attacker and 40 members of the Central Reserve Police Force in Pulwama, in Kashmir. The Indian government blamed Pakistan for supporting terrorists in Kashmir, and it sent fighter jets to Pakistan. Although there is no evidence that India managed to destroy a terrorist training center in Pakistan, and although one of the fighter jets crashed in Pakistan, BJP was able to capitalize on the events by fomenting nationalist fervor and taking recourse in the rhetoric of national unity and the glory of flexing its military muscle. The campaign was extremely successful this time. BJP won absolute majority in the lower house of the Indian parliament. As a consequence, BJP has grown bolder and it has set to implement its majoritarian policies in earnest. It is noteworthy that BJP did not touch the constitution during its first term, but now, when only 6 months of its second term in power have passed, it has already changed the constitution on 2 instances. The first instance came on 5th August 2019. Without prior introduction of the bill in the parliament, the Minister of Home Affairs, Amit Shah, proposed that the Articles 370 and 35A would be abolished from the constitution. The bill was passed in both houses of the parliament in a couple of days. Article 370 has granted Jammu and Kashmir autonomy in certain matters that were normally decided by the central government. In fact, this autonomy had been largely symbolic, but it had been an important symbol nevertheless. Article 35 prevented non-residents of the state of Jammu and Kashmir from buying land in the state. Amit Shah justified the decision saying that abolishing the special status of Jammu and Kashmir would allow it to enjoy the same benefits of development as the rest of the India. This, again, would lead to curbing of militants in Kashmir. Kashmiris, on the other hand, felt that this was the ultimate betrayal from the state of India. They expressed their fears that their land would be sold to Indians, that their unique culture would be destroyed, and the fragile Himalayan ecosystem would be harmed. That establishing an office to deal with land transactions was one of the first things the central government did in Kashmir has not alleviated these fears. Now, in December 2019, Kashmir Valley has been under a lockdown for over 4 months. Internet and mobile phone connections have been suspended, and landlines are only partially operative. Most of the political leadership of Kashmir, even those who have always believed that the future of Kashmir lies with India, is either under house arrest or in jail. India has also increased the number of military and paramilitary forces in Kashmir. The exact number of soldiers and security troops is unknown, but estimates range from 500,000 to 800,000. As a result, the Kashmir Valley is one of the most heavily militarized areas in the world, where there is one soldier for about 10 civilians. Despite these exceptionally drastic measures, the rest of India seems to have accepted the fate of Kashmir, and no protests have followed the decision. The acceptance is perhaps a result of the decade-long portrayal of Kashmiris as troublemakers, dissidents and terrorists in the rest of India. Such creatures hardly deserve any sympathy. In addition, the abolishing of the articles was done so suddenly that no one had time to react, and this speed probably also worked for the advantage of the ruling party. At the first glance, it may appear surprising that there has been very few protests in Kashmir itself. Instead of rallying on the streets, the Kashmiris have chosen passive resistance. By keeping the shops open only for a couple of hours a day and halting public transport, the Kashmiris question Amit Shah's repeated claims that normalcy has returned to the Kashmir Valley. However, even in the standards of Kashmir and its difficult history with India, the present conditions are a far cry of normalcy. The second controversial act of BJP after its second election triumph has been the creation of an NRC, or National Register of Citizens, in the state of Assam in northwestern India. In Assam, all the inhabitants have been called to prove that they are of Indian origin and have a right to the citizenship. This process began already before BJP came into power in 2010, and it is supervised by the Supreme Court. As a part of its manifesto, BJP has promised to get rid of illegal migrants, whom the leading figures of BJP routinely call infiltrators and termites. BJP was initially enthusiastic supporter of the NRC in Assam, where, according to the leaders of the party, millions of Bangladeshi Muslim migrant workers live. However, in the summer of 2019, it became obvious that among those who would not be able to prove their citizenship are many Bengali Hindus who had arrived at the state either from West Bengal or from Bangladesh. After this realization, BJP has said to oppose the NRC. However, the process has continued. BJP has also promised that the National Register of Citizens will cover the entire country by the end of their term in 2024. The latest addition to the constitutional definitions of citizenship, and ultimately an answer to the question who belongs to the Indian nation and by which criteria is this belonging defined, has come in the form of the Citizenship Amendment Act, or CAA, introduced in the Parliament on 11 September. This act is a logical consequence of BJP's retraction of its support of the NRC in Assam when it became obvious that it targets Hindus instead of Muslims. According to the Citizenship Amendment Act, persons who belong to the religious minorities but who have fled religious persecution can apply for Indian citizenship even if they have come to the country without valid travel documents, that is, illegally. The religious minorities that are listed in the Act include Hindus, Sikhs, Buddhists, Jains, Parsis, and Christians. The countries where they can come from include Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. That is, the Act applies to non-Muslims coming from Muslim-majority countries. Thus, it does not cover, for example, members of the Ahmadi sect who consider themselves as Muslims but who are non-Muslims according to the Constitution of Pakistan and who are persecuted in Pakistan. Neither does it apply to Muslims coming from the Buddhist majority countries like Myanmar and Sri Lanka, where Muslims are persecuted by the Buddhist majority. This act betrays BJP's Hindu nationalist credentials and the belief that the citizenship of India is based on religion. What makes this act so dramatic is the fact that this is now the first time that religion as the foundation of citizenship is introduced into the Indian constitution. Unlike the withdrawal of the autonomy of Kashmir, Citizenship Amendment Act has evoked protests around India. In different locations, the protesters have different reasons to oppose the act. In Assam, where forming the National Register of Citizens is underway, the local inhabitants, both Hindus and Muslims, have reacted by rallying on the streets because they are afraid that the Bengalis who have arrived at the strait from West Bengal and from Bangladesh will take over the state. In two universities, Jamia Millia Islamia in Delhi and Aligarh Muslim University in Aligarh, the students demonstrated against the act because they think it further marginalizes Muslims in Indian society and violates the secular spirit of the Indian constitution. In both Delhi and Aligarh, the police forced an entry to the campus and fired tear gas on the unarmed students in order to disperse the demonstrations. After the violence in the two campuses, students of a number of Indian universities staged protests in support of their fellow students and in protest to the violation of the secular spirit of the constitution. However, as the Supreme Court has refused to halt the Citizenship Amendment Act, there seems to be very little on the way of it becoming a reality and also setting the tone of the nationwide National Register of Citizens PAB is set to create. In the beginning of the first part of this lecture, I stated that I will use nationalism as a neutral term in this presentation. However, it has become clear that nationalism is an ideology that is prone to become a means of discrimination against those who do not fit into the model of an ideal citizen. Since the origins of nationalism in the late 19th century, religion has played a focal role in South Asian nationalism. This is partly due to the British understanding of India as a region where people are divided into various groups according to religious fault lines. This understanding was then appropriated by both Hindu and Muslim nationalists. Especially the Muslim League's divisive campaign to secure the creation of Pakistan did a lot to rule out the peaceful coexistence of Hindus and Muslims, which had been a norm rather than exception in pre-colonial India. Although the Indian National Congress opposed the conflating of religion with nationalism, the systematic work of Hindu nationalist organizations and the resounding victories of BJP in general elections in 2014 and in 2019 have taken India many steps towards becoming an ethnic democracy. Already now, in the end of 2019, it has in many respects become a Hindu majoritarian state, mirroring the developments that have taken place in Pakistan gradually after 1947. The question is where now? How will Imran Khan's Pakistan realize its dream of becoming an internationally respected state if it continues to discriminate against religious minorities? How will BJP deal with the opposition to its tampering with the secular spirit of the constitution? And how long will the image of India as an exotic and spiritual land persist in the West? While telling the future is impossible, it is fairly safe to say that the union of religion and nationalism is both in Pakistan and in India stronger than ever before, and there are practically no signs that would indicate any weakening in this union. Rather, the opposite is true. Thank you for listening to this lecture.